If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery. When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today you'll hear Seth chat with the New York Times' Michael Barbaro, then an all-new Late Night Chats with head writer Alex Bays and field coordinator Dan McElroy. But first, a closer look.
Even by Trump standards, this has been an insane week. Day after day, there have been mounting scandals, culminating with yesterday's appointment of a special counsel to oversee the Russia investigation. And now, Trump is heading out on his first foreign trip as president under a cloud of suspicion. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. The pace at which Trump scandals have been unfolding over the past week has been mind-boggling. Of course, the historical precedent everyone seems to be using for comparison's sake is Watergate, but even that seems to be inadequate in describing how quickly things are moving, as Senator John McCain explained yesterday.
It's just another scandal. It's just another scandal that, unfortunately, continues every... Only it's now accelerated. Watergate took many months, and this thing seems to be taking hours.
Yeah, this isn't Watergate. It's the Watergate Express. In the Trump era, every hour feels like a month. In fact, time now works for us the way crowd sizes work for Trump. A few thousand can seem like 1.5 million hours. All of this, of course, came to a head yesterday with the appointment of a special counsel.
A special independent counsel has been named to head up the investigation of the Trump administration and Russian interference with the U.S. election.
The department naming former FBI Chief Robert Mueller as special counsel. The decision a bow to the growing pressure from Capitol Hill after the president's firing of FBI Director James Comey, who was leading his own Russia investigation, and the cascade of stunning developments this week that have followed.
Up until today, President Donald Trump has had the ability to control almost every news cycle. From this day forward, he no longer has control. And instead, if you will, of being the hunter, he becomes the hunted.
Yeah, but I'm not sure Trump was much of a hunter before this. His only prey came in buckets.
If you move too fast, you scare them off.
Today, Trump took questions for the first time on the appointment of a special counsel during a press conference with the president of Colombia. But even when he was trying to focus on topics other than the Russia investigation, he didn't seem very sure of himself. Like when he discussed the two countries' joint efforts to end the production of coca, from which cocaine is made, but he kept mispronouncing it.
Recently, we have seen an alarmed, and I mean really a very highly alarmed and alarming trend. Last year, Colombia cocoa cultivation and cocaine production reached a record high. Today, I affirm the United States' willingness to assist Colombia's strategy to target and eliminate drug trafficking networks, illicit financings, cocoa, cultivation.
Cocoa? Does he think chocolate and cocaine come from the same place? In fact, we've already captured famous drug kingpin El Chaco. Now, in his role as special counsel, Mueller will have broad authority, and he's going to need it because there's a lot to look into. Take, for example, Trump's disgraced former national security advisor, Michael Flynn. And let's face it, the guy, he just looks shady. Flynn looks like a guy who only comes into town once a year for supplies.
Shame about those missing hikers. Police got any leads yet?
As you may know, Flynn is under FBI investigation for his ties to Russia, but he's also under investigation for taking secret payments from Turkey without registering as a foreign agent, which you're required to do by law. And last night, we got yet another bombshell about what the Trump team knew with regard to Flynn and when they knew it.
The New York Times reporting Michael Flynn told President Trump's transition team weeks before the inauguration that he was under federal investigation for secretly working as a paid lobbyist for Turkey during the campaign. Despite the warning, Mr. Trump made Flynn his national security advisor.
So they hired someone who was under active FBI investigation for taking secret payments from a foreign government as the national security advisor. That's like hiring a babysitter who's still wearing one handcuff. So just think about this for a second. Donald Trump and his associates are facing multiple FBI investigations over foreign payments and possible collusion with a foreign government, as well as investigations in the House and Senate, and now a special counsel. I just wish someone had warned us about the disastrous consequences of a president who would be under investigation while in office.
The FBI now has multiple open criminal investigations into Hillary Clinton. And now she's going to run the country. She'll be under investigation for years. She'll be with trials. I mean, we went through it with him with the impeachment and the lies. Aren't we tired of this stuff? This election will determine whether we remain a free country in the truest sense of the word, or we become a corrupt banana republic controlled by large donors and foreign governments. This is collusion and corruption of the highest order, and is one more reason why I ask my attorney general, I will ask, to appoint a special prosecutor.
It's literally the only campaign promise he's actually kept. It's almost like Donald Trump is a time traveler sent to warn us about himself.
Oh, God, I'm too late.
Now, the timing of all of this chaos could not be worse for Trump because on Friday, he sets out for his first foreign trip to Europe and the Middle East, and aides were hoping it would represent a chance to reboot his presidency. Instead, with all of the turmoil going on, Trump seems less than excited about the trip. According to the Times, Trump, a confirmed homebody, has expressed dread about the trip, asking aides whether it can be shortened to 5 days from 9. So he's basically a kid who doesn't want to go to summer camp.
But what if they don't have the snacks I like?
And he doesn't seem to want to do much preparation for the trip either. According to a report in Reuters yesterday, conversations with some officials who have briefed Trump and others who are aware of how he absorbs information portray a president with a short attention span. He likes single-page memos and visual aids like maps, charts, graphs, and photos. And National Security Council officials have strategically included Trump's name in as many paragraphs as we can because he keeps reading if he's mentioned. They have to put his name in stuff to keep him interested. Soon they're going to have to start writing his intelligence briefings on a mirror. In fact, Trump's aides aren't the only ones concerned about Trump's ability to stay focused. During this trip, Trump will meet with leaders of NATO, our most important military alliance. And according to a recent report, NATO is scrambling to tailor its upcoming meeting to avoid taxing President Donald Trump's notoriously short attention span. The alliance is telling heads of state to limit talks to 2 to 4 minutes. In fact, they're presenting the information to Trump on a placemat. So, as he heads out on his trip to meet the leaders of foreign nations, Trump takes with him a cloud of suspicion and questions about his competence. The constant drumbeat of scandal and chaos coming from this White House is exhausting. Or, to put it another way,
aren't we tired of this stuff?
Yeah, that sounds about right. This has been A Closer Look.
Hi, this is Fred Armisen, the music director of the HG Band. Did you know that Late Night with Seth Meyers has a podcast now? That's what this is. And it's released every Wednesday and Friday. Tell your friends who love Late Night that they should subscribe at iTunes.com/LateNightSeth. You'll find it. What I just said, you'll be able to find it. I believe in you.
Our guest is the managing editor and host of the New York Times' fantastic podcast, The Daily, which releases new episodes weekday mornings. Please welcome to the show, Michael Barbaro. How are you?
I'm really well. You know, on our show, we just have little plastic bottles of water.
Plastic bottle. Well, that's the difference between on camera and a podcast.
This we need to make it look. Mug has the name of your show.
It's
on
a mug. It's a beautiful piece of
Note
ceramic.
To self.
So, congrats. You started this podcast in April. Is that about right?
We started this podcast in February.
February. Okay, great. I'm sorry.
No, by the way,
I've been listening.
Never correct a host.
Yeah, exactly. But I will say, time has been sort of different. It's folding in on
it's
itself.
It's been distorted.
Was it your idea to do this podcast? How did this start?
I wish it were my idea.
Yeah.
No, it was the idea of very smart people that the New York Times went out and hired from the world of audio who thought it would be a brilliant idea to take the engine that is the New York Times newsroom and transform it into sound and to create an incredibly intimate, powerful relationship with the journalists at the Times and your ears. And it's been really successful, and it's been so fun.
It's been incredibly effective at that. For me as a listener, it's 20 minutes every morning. You get it up at 6 a.m.
Yep.
And I feel as though we have a slightly similar problem now, which is our best laid plans often get thrown out the window by what's happening with the Trump administration. Has that been the case for you? Do you have to throw things out all the time?
Oh, yeah. I have become a professional writer of thank you emails that double as condolence letters to my colleagues because we have had to kill a segment. I mean, this president and his administration, they slay the best laid plans in journalism. And we are supposed to have the inside track to what's going on at the New York Times, and the show is built around one or two big stories a day that we're going to really lay out and richly tell. We invest all this time and energy to it, and then at 6 o'clock, the president fires his national security advisor, fires the director of the FBI, bans travel from seven countries, and we just have to blow it up.
You do have, of course, this incredible resource, which is you have to apologize to this person, but then the expert on the thing that just happened is what? Just right down the hall, basically.
Yeah, one phone call away. I mean, so part of what we do on the show is we call my colleagues wherever they are on Earth.
And you play the conversation.
We play the conversation so that when they pick up the phone and they're still screaming at somebody, we play it. And we do that, and it's become such a recurring theme, and it's really popular that we've occasionally skirted the line between what a reporter would want us to play and what we would want to play. So now what we occasionally do is we'll capture people bickering, we'll capture somebody in a sort of foul mood, we'll capture all these wonderful details. You're in a Kinko's, you need to ask Josh at Kinko's if you can use the phone. That's in the show. We now occasionally send that to the reporter. We say, is this okay?
Yeah. Well, one of my favorites is recently, because again, also you are talking to them as the news is breaking.
Live.
Someone else often needs them to actually do their work. And I remember one reporter saying, I got to go. Somebody's giving me the stink eye. And it's very clear. Are they excited to talk
to
you? Yes. Okay, good.
Absolutely.
All right, good.
They're absolutely excited. They're absolutely excited to talk to us until very suddenly they're not, because they have to file their story. Or the editor is giving them a stink eye.
One of the things that's been great for me is, I've read these bylines over the years, and now I feel like I'm getting to know the reporters at the New York Times.
Because you're hearing them.
You're hearing them, and you're getting to understand sort of what I like about it is they all seem like incredibly reasonable people. I'm so sorry the New York Times is failing as badly as I'm hearing it's failing. But it just doesn't seem fair. But
you know, there's nothing fake about them. When
Yeah. They
are real.
And did you know them all? Did you have a relationship with everybody?
I have a relationship with about half of them.
Gotcha.
And the other I am dating and courting and cajoling all day long. I've been a reporter at the Times for 11 years. I had a lot of relationships. But nothing has helped me get to know the reporters of the Times better than being on the phone with them all day long. And hearing them talk about the stories that they cover in a way that I never understood just how well they understood. I mean, these people live the journalism that they're covering, whether it's ISIS, whether it is the economy, whether it is President Trump. The people I work with are extraordinary.
It is also extraordinary for me because I read these things, and I will admit there are times where it becomes, it's outside of what I understand, and it's hard to follow. And you realize it's such a nice thing to go along with the article to listen to these people sort of talk about it in sort of more casual terms helps you learn it. Yeah. I feel a lot better. And you have done, you know, this last week, I think, like us, you got caught up a lot. Is it Michael Schmidt? Is he the name of the writer?
Michael Schmidt. The world should know the name.
Yeah.
Michael Schmidt.
He sort of broke a lot of the stories this week.
Yes.
And so that was incredible. But you've also done really wonderful work where you've called people outside the bubble,
yes,
for lack of a better word. You spoke to a coal miner.
That's right. That's exactly the right way to put it.
And it was really wonderful because you allowed this coal miner, you gave him the space to sort of talk about how much it means to him to have coal jobs come back. And
right,
even though we have now know more about the environmental impact of coal, for this man, he was willing to go back in the mine the next day. How did that come about? How do you find someone like that?
Well, a colleague of mine had talked to this coal miner. His name was Mark Gray. He'd worked in southern Kentucky in coal mines his whole career until coal mining started to fall apart as an industry. And I called him, and I just wanted to put this enormous debate we're all having as a country and as a world about environmental policy into a very human context. And as I began to talk to him, he was so generous in inviting me to come to a coal mine and in recognizing that I'd never been to a coal mine. And I began to get quite emotional.
Yeah.
And that all happened in the context of the episode. And I would say I didn't just become a little emotional. I began to break down.
Yeah.
And in keeping with the way our show works, that all ran. And I'll tell you, it's not easy to keep asking someone questions when you're falling apart and kind of crying in the middle of an interview. But I managed to do it.
Yeah.
And I thought the interview was a really powerful testament to just letting someone talk, to just letting someone tell their story. And this man's story was a story that people think they understand in their head, one way or another. They like the industry he's in, they hate the industry he's in. But in listening to this guy talk, you very powerfully understood where he was coming from. And it reframed this debate that feels kind of distant and difficult to understand.
Personally, I had that same reaction of, okay, there are a lot of things I believe. I feel as though I've done the work to reach these conclusions, and I do sometimes forget that it affects people in a negative way. And so I thought it was just really lovely that you
took
the time. And I really do enjoy when you have people on that, again, I as much as I never heard New York Times reporters talk before, I certainly have never heard a coal miner get to speak like that.
So you're recommending more miner, less times?
I guess just, yeah, basically. I think it's the right amount of miner and times. But you, when you were a reporter, you had actually dealt with Donald Trump.
I have
interviewed him. And
several times.
What were your first interactions with him like? Because is it safe to say that he is more charismatic on a one-to-one when he's dealing with a reporter than we would be led to believe with his attacks on the press now?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, I first called Donald Trump when I was a City Hall reporter at the New York Times, and I wanted, this was a really noble, investigative piece of journalism I was working on, to know more about Mayor Michael Bloomberg's golf game. So when you're desperate for a great quote in the mid-2000s, you pick up the phone and you call real estate developer Donald Trump, and he answers immediately. And he got on and talked to me about Michael Bloomberg's golf game. And it was easy and kind of wonderful to talk to him back then. And that continued on until the beginning of the campaign. I remember going to his office. I wanted to talk to him about Twitter. He's a master of Twitter. So I went to his office. He really wanted to talk about Twitter. That was another thing where, can I talk to the candidate Donald Trump about Twitter? Literally an hour later, I'm in Trump Tower in his office. We're talking about Twitter. He takes out his phone and he begins to show me with enormous excitement what happens when he sends a tweet. And as each and every retweet goes on, the ping, the ping, the ping, the dopamine is going off. He's so excited. And by the way, if you get a lot of retweets, it is exciting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I've been there.
And you have a lot of fun, right? You know.
Yeah, but still, you know, you always want more. Yeah.
So that was another wonderful interview. Then the campaign goes on, and I was involved in a lot of more complicated investigative stories about the way he treated women,
mm-hmm,
as a business person, as a human being. And he then took that wonderful Twitter feed that he loves so much, and he called on me to resign.
Yep.
On Twitter. So that relationship evolved.
When you...
Oh, but by the way, just to circle back, then he came to the New York Times editorial board at the end of the campaign. He was elected.
I remember, yeah.
And he shook my hand, and he called the New York Times a national jewel. So it's just a little disorienting sometimes,
yeah,
to kind of place him in his kind of ping-pong journey between loving the press and unloving the press.
And the fact that that ping pong game is being played with everything, not just the press. It's like they're just ping pong balls everywhere. When you saw the tweet that he asked you to resign, did you have a moment of, was it terror or was it joy? Because
it wasn't joy.
It wasn't joy. See, I think when you think of it, the class you were in when he attacks you, you are now in Meryl Streep territory. And I think you should enjoy it because I think you've earned it.
Oh, thank you, Seth.
And keep up the good work. I'm so glad I found your podcast.
Thank you.
Michael Barbaro, everybody. New episodes of The Daily are available weekday mornings.
All right. Hi, I'm Alex Bays, and I'm the head writer and a producer here at Late Night.
And I'm Dan McElroy. I'm the field coordinator and part-time cat sitter for Alex Bays.
And this is Late Night Chats with Alex and Dan. Okay. It's already weird that I said my first name because no one here
knows you as Alex.
No one uses my first name.
No, you are one of the few people here who strictly go by their last name. They go by Bays.
Yeah, it's really strict.
Scollins, who's the writer here?
Scollins,
maybe?
I still call him Mike once in a while, or Scully.
Yeah, you're Scully.
Yeah. I think it's because of Seth. Seth started calling me Bays 13 years ago.
When
it really stuck.
When he first started. Who started first at SNL? Because you're
referring
to SNL,
he
of course.
Started like a year before me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't even really meet him for 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
I didn't really meet him in any serious way until he got Update.
Okay.
I started at Update under Tina and Amy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, was it like 2 years of that? And then it was Amy and Seth? Yeah. So that's when I first got to know him, really.
Right. And then he just right off the bat called you. It was just like your base.
He's very sports oriented, so I think he likes to go with last names.
That's fair.
He imagined he sees everyone in a jersey.
Yeah, you have a specific name. Bays 13, stepping up to the plate.
During the introduction, you said your job title here at the show, which is a thing I've never known and always wondered about you. Because you are a hardworking dude. I know that.
Thank you.
You're on task. Mm. I see you like up and down the hallways carrying a tripod or a camera or something. Sometimes I'll see you talking intently with somebody in an entirely different department. And I've always wondered, what is his job?
Yeah. It's a bit of a utility.
Say it again. You're a field?
Field coordinator.
Okay. That means nothing.
It means nothing. It's a utility player almost. I came in as a field production assistant, and I've risen the ranks.
Where's the field?
The field is so the field.
What field?
Yeah. So anything that is for more or less done outside of the studio, anything that we do for pre-taped purposes.
Okay, like a field reporter in journalism. Okay. So the field is not.
It's not just an
game.
Open
field. It's an away game.
We do film every now and then in an open field, but
that's true.
Yeah, we for the most part, if we can build sets or if we can build in a studio, we utilize our own studio, Studio AJ, or then we'll go to SNL and we'll build.
Okay.
Yeah, into 8H.
So a piece gets written.
By
it's got
one of your
oh,
writers.
Oh, part of this takes place in a park.
Yeah,
and so then it comes to you, and you're like, oh. Man, we need a park.
Yeah.
And that's your job? You find a park?
Yeah, it specifically comes right to me, and then they say, find me a park, and that's
and give me a tripod.
I'll run up and down the hall a bunch.
So you get, equipment to the park.
Yeah.
Check the weather, stuff like that. That's all on you.
Yeah. Sure, kind all right. of. What we usually do is...
I don't go to the shoots.
Yeah, you're like, just if it gets done, great.
I'm like, I delegate.
Yeah, that's... I'm just trying to aim for that. I'm trying to get that level.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah. So what usually happens is a pre-tape will be written, and then it'll come to a production meeting. And then whoever wrote it, the writer who wrote it, will sit down with Mike Carnell, who's a segment director and a writer here. And then a bunch of our other producers and other staff members will gather together, and they'll go through all the elements of the script, and we'll figure out logistically how do we make this happen. How many cameras are we using? Sort of what freelancers we need to hire for if it's a multicam shoot or audio.
All right.
Yeah. So we kind of... it's a pretty small team, so it's when you think of like SNL, you think of the film unit. We're not exactly SNL. We have about 2 or 3 people and somehow put it together, which is the reason why I run up and down the hallway with
anything more than 2 people is a unit.
Yeah, that's a unit. Which you need 4.
My favorite job that you have here, which I don't think this ties into your actual job at all, is listeners will know that every night we have a different affiliate mug, a coffee mug, on Seth's desk from a different NBC affiliate somewhere in the country. And you, I don't know how this started, will come to the production meeting, tell us which affiliate mug we have that night, and we get a fun fact about that city, usually an obscure law, or it's somebody's birthplace.
Yeah, so I've been deemed...
And it's a highlight of the production meeting.
It's a nice way to kind of break it up. It's a little bit of an icebreaker. I think you deemed me Mug Fact Mac. Somebody,
Mug Fact Mac.
Yeah, and
could be.
My last name being Mac, or I am now Mug Fact Mac. I'll never live it down. But yeah, so it kind of just started. So I started working at the show right after the one-year anniversary, and... I remember on my first day, I came to the production meeting, didn't know what was happening, and I was like, all right, I'll figure it out. And they told me, what's the affiliate mug today? And I had no idea what was going on. I didn't know that there was a mug on the desk that I had to be in charge of. And then so once I realized that was something I had to do, I thought it was a fun little way to sort of, like you said, break up the meeting and give a fun fact about each city, so it can be like Kansas City or San Diego, whatever it is.
I liked the one, was it San Francisco the other day? I had a pretty cool mug fact.
San Francisco, what did I say?
Because there's so much to say about San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it was the home of the bendy straw.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where the bendy straw was invented. Right.
Yeah, I try to make it something silly or like obscure, like you said. I don't want it to be like, oh, the number one anything. I always try to make it number
oh,
nine.
Yeah, the number eight like, city for
yeah. I think
dating.
I think when I said your affiliate, which is in Arizona.
Tucson.
Yeah. I think I said it was like the number 32 state for like energy or something, and you were so upset at me. Like, first of all, it was a very, very bad fact, and it was such a low number. You're like, I've waited so long
it's,
for this.
Yeah, and when this it's your home field,
yeah,
you
yeah.
feel like you want to be represented a little bit better.
Yeah.
No offense.
No, that's fair. But when it hits...
Although sitting here right now, I can't think of a more interesting thing about
yeah,
Tucson.
I was going to say, give me some of that Tucson then.
My friend Drew is from there.
So Baze's friend Drew is from Tucson, and yeah, that's what you get.
Yep. But, that is what you
sorry,
get.
Yeah. But it has turned into this sort of thing that anytime we have some something outside of the office, like... a work party or anything like that, that without fail, everyone will always come up to me and ask me about it. So it's kind of been a nice way for me to talk to people and have something to say. And,
that's your hook.
Yeah.
That's, my, that's your big hook now.
Every now and then I have
it's
a little social anxiety. So I'm like, you want to know about mugs? And I'm just talking to you about an affiliate mug.
No. It's such a terrible thing that this happened to you.
Yeah, it's really bad. I can't get out of it. Yeah.
Oh, no.
But
you also have the distinction of being my cat sitter occasionally.
Yeah.
I have one cat.
Mm-hmm. Lottie.
Yeah, Lottie's
the lovely Lottie.
A very attractive fuzzy cat.
She has a lot to say.
She has a lot to say. I don't know what's wrong with her. She's going to the dentist tomorrow because I think it might be that. But she never stops talking.
Mm-hmm.
But when I go out of town on the weekend or on a hiatus week, Dan's usually nice enough to stay in town and look after
it's
the
always
kitty cat.
Yeah, you have cable. It's great. I get to, you tell me I get to sit on your couch and I can watch some TV.
It's so funny how I jumped a tax bracket and all of a sudden I'm like, people don't have cable?
Yeah.
This is an attraction?
Yeah, I get to watch Time Warner Cable.
It's amazing how fast you burn the ladder behind you.
Yeah, yeah. Watch like, some news.
What,
some...
doesn't everybody have a Fabergé egg?
It's like, no, that's not what happens. It's like,
I'm a terrible person.
No, it's great. I will say, I take the job very seriously, and I do it with pride.
You do a great job.
Yeah, I feed
that's
the
one
cat.
Of my favorite things about you. Whatever you're doing, you do it well.
I pet the cat. I hang out.
You pet
I
the
tell
cat.
Her she's lovely. I want to ask.
That's more than I do for the cat, by the way.
I will not pet you. Do not pet your own cat.
No. I have people for that.
Yeah, I pay this person to pet my cat. It's great. I will say, one time when I was watching Lottie, you have a vacuum in a closet. And,
that's true.
Anytime, so Lottie
that's
will make
cool,
a
that you, cool that you went through the closet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry, I went through your purse. But you have a tennis racket hanging in your closet. And I also know you play golf. I didn't know how
true.
Much of an athlete you are. This is
what is that supposed to mean?
What? I mean, in the
right.
nicest way. You're a great athlete. No, but
trim.
I was trying to pay a compliment, and this went down so south, so quick.
Being defensive is a very important part of comedy.
That's fair. But I do feel, with a lot of writers here, the best way to get comedy is to go out and sort of live life, and they all have their own process. So sure. I was going to sort of transition this into sort of your own process for writing here specifically, because I know writing here is a lot different than writing anywhere else because we have deadlines every day. You sort of have, you know, your 11:30, 1:30, 4:15.
Yeah, we have multiple deadlines, at least for monologue jokes, mm-hmm. in the course of the day. But mm-hmm. It's very much like Weekend Update,
mm-hmm.
because, well, it's Seth.
Yeah,
that's, and that's how he and I both learned how to do jokes,
because mm-hmm.
he's, you know, a sketch writer and mm-hmm. was a sketch actor.
Mm-hmm.
I was a sketch writer for the longest time and an improviser. Mm-hmm. For a year into my late 30s before I even thought about writing a joke.
Sure.
And then I applied to SNL a million years ago with a sketch packet. And they were like, this is a very good sketch packet, and you came in fourth place, and we are hiring three people. So sorry, but thank you. But if you want, you can fax jokes to Weekend Update every week. So I was like, okay, I'll do that. At least keep my name on somebody's desk.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how to write jokes, but I'll figure it out,
fourth
I guess, maybe.
Yeah,
yeah, I was like fourth place sketch writer. Maybe I can figure out the joke thing. So I really started watching, I guess it was Colin at the time. It was Colin Quinn had Update. And I would just watch. And when I saw a joke I really liked, I would like try to reverse engineer it in my head and like, try to figure out.
Deconstruct
it. How did they get there? How did it get there from there? And just like really break it down and get mathematical about it. And slowly, you know, I was faxing in jokes and mm-hmm. getting rejected and rejected. And I did this for 6 years.
Mm.
And it wasn't until the fifth year that I started getting jokes on pretty regularly. And by then it was Tina and Jimmy had Update.
Mm-hmm.
And Tina especially was using a lot of my jokes. And after 6 years, I was like, and I'd been submitting a sketch packet as well every year and nothing happening. And at that point, I was like, screw this. They're never going to hire me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to stop doing it. So I stopped doing it. And as soon as I stopped doing it, I got a call.
Yeah.
And we're like, hey, where's your submission
packet?
We need
these, yeah.
Where's your packet? How come you stopped? And I was like, oh, I don't know. I'm at a wedding in Scotland right now. And they're like, well, we have an opening. So can you come be interviewed?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. And I was living in L.A. at the time. So I had to fly from Scotland to L.A., and then, like, the next day, I fly back to New York. I don't know why I had to go to L.A. first. There's a reason, but I don't remember what it was. It was probably a cat that had to be petted. But I came to New York, and I got the job writing jokes for Weekend Update, which is... I guess I had sort of figured out how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I was there under Tina Fey's tutelage, who's brilliant with jokes, and Amy Poehler, who can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned from the two of them, and... that's how I learned watching those guys on Colin Quinn and Jimmy and Tina and Amy. And I was like, oh, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
They have all the different moves. You know, Tina's got the cerebral and dry version and mm-hmm. Amy Poehler can do the performance-y kind of jokes.
Yeah.
And so you sort of learn every version.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, funneled it all to Seth and we did Update together.
That's great.
For however many years he did it. It was like...
he was 12 and a half years as a cast member.
Did it for... 4 or 5 or 6 years himself. I don't know.
Yeah.
Time gets very blurry when you live in this building.
Yeah, no, I'm starting to realize that. Yeah. I'm like, I'm going to start getting old. It's very soon.
Yeah, it's going to happen real fast.
Yeah, enjoyably, though. So I love it. It's great.
If time is going to move forward,
execs,
if this
you're listening
is a great
to the podcast,
place for it to
please
do that.
Don't come down on me. I mean,
it's a great way to age.
Yeah. You got the commissary, so it's not that bad.
That's true.
So you spent some time there, and you evolved with those with the people anchoring Weekend Update. Our show, you know, only a few years old, has already evolved so much. I mean, from the standing monologue to the sitting monologue, our closer looks, all of that.
Yeah.
How is your own role here kind of changed in that regard with the show? How are you writing your jokes?
The ongoing challenge for me, I think, as a head writer, is to figure out how much to have my hands in everything.
Because
mm-hmm. the temptation, of course, and Seth is like this too, is to get your hands in everything mm-hmm. and write everything or rewrite everything and just, you know, shove everybody out of your office and go, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Get out. I'll figure it out. But you have a show every night.
Yeah.
Like at SNL, you could sort of take over and do it all yourself and mm-hmm. you had time because you had the whole week to put together an update.
Which sounds strange because it's... You know,
yeah, well, you had a week to put together a 10-minute update, and now we have a day to put together
the monologue.
15, 20 minutes at the top of the show.
Sure.
So it forces you to delegate and just go, all right, you handle this as best you can. Mm-hmm. God bless you. And we'll figure it out later.
Yeah.
And I'll do this part. And so it's learning, like, what not to do.
Right.
Was the hard part.
Mm-hmm.
Because I, you know, a lot of people are like, let's collaborate and we'll all play together. And I'm of the other ilk. We're like, just get out of here and I'll do it.
Just, I got to work.
I'll show you when I'm done.
Yeah.
But that doesn't work.
Yeah.
So it's teaching me to be a little more collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
I mostly work on the monologue and I help with the closer looks, mm-hmm. putting jokes in those, or some of the jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really have time to contribute to like the sketches and the other pieces and like you burnt and stuff like that. I don't have time to write. Yeah. And you know, they all learn from each other and they all learn from Seth and you know, nobody's losing. Everyone's learning from everybody else.
Yeah.
And you know, there's things I can learn from somebody who just started here.
Mm-hmm.
Not as many as they could learn from me.
Come to
if
me.
If they're listening.
But
there's always something.
Yeah. So my question to follow up with that is, was there a turning point or is it just time that sort of forces you to learn that, to kind of, you know, delegate and to give to your writers to
there's so little time to sit and reflect in any way. Like, I'm going to change my approach to this problem.
Mm-hmm.
You just are reacting and you're reacting constantly and over again. And eventually it just becomes the new thing.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, oh, I try to write for a long time, the first year and a half of the show, I would try to write 30 jokes a day. And I did it and I forced myself and it was going crazier and crazier. And I was like, oh, I just don't have the time.
Yeah.
It was what I was slowly realizing as the closer look became more prominent. And I was like, oh, that's as important as the monologue, if not more so. I want to put more energy into that.
Right.
And you just sort of are doing it unconsciously.
Right.
You're just adjusting and adapting, and you start to let go of the thought process.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, I'm just going to follow.
Yeah.
Where I go.
Yeah.
And just stop trying to force it.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's how the show evolved too. It's like the first year of the show is a lot of forcing everything.
Yeah.
It's so, like,
your voice.
We're going to try this.
Yeah.
Like, nope.
Yeah.
We don't like that. we're going to try this other thing. Nope. Okay. Well, then what if Seth is just himself? I'm like, yeah, okay. That's what we wanted the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. Should have been doing
that's
it.
That's what everybody wants.
Yeah. And I will say, like, I also got here when I started here. It was such an exciting time because I started in March 2015. So I was about a month or two before Trump had actually announced that he was running before he came down the escalator.
That focused us too, by the way.
So it was fun to get like whatever 3 months of pre-Trump. I'm like, oh, this is fun, and like kind of see us like look for the voice and look for the identity of the show.
Trying to figure out what to talk about on any given day.
Right.
I'm just like, there's nothing going on.
And I just remember everyone like gathering around because I sat right by this TV where everyone would gather around and like was watching him announce his presidency, and everyone was like, oh, this is such a joke. And it's like, oh, we'll make like a week of jokes of this, and then we'll forget.
This speech is great.
Yeah, and it's
this will be the craziest thing that ever happens.
Yeah. It just kept happening. Yeah.
And who knows what's next?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Oh,
we will keep doing this as long as it's legal.
As long as it's legal and doesn't come down on us, we'll be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Save your money.
Yeah. Place your bets. All right. Well, I have one other. I asked a bunch of people because I was interviewing you. I was very excited to do this because I think we're friendly and we're close here at the show. But like you said, we didn't know in depth of what each other did. So I asked a few people, you know, what should I ask Bayes? What do the people want to know about Bayes?
Oh boy!
And I asked
how
five,
many people did you have to ask before someone had an answer?
I asked five people.
Uh-huh.
And they all gave me different things, but they all had one common thing, and it was that you're part of a Sock of the Month club.
True.
Is this something you talk about a lot, or that they've investigated to find out about you?
This was my Secret Santa gift.
Okay.
Someone gave me a 3-month membership to the Sock of the Month club, because I was wearing like colorful socks because you gotta have
You're
fun.
A professional dude.
You gotta have fun.
You wear cool glasses, Oakley glasses.
I work something? Hard all day.
Yeah.
Let me have some fun from the shins down at least.
When I cross my legs, I want the people to know.
So, yeah. So, it was Amanda.
Oh, Amanda Cowper.
Gave me a...
Who's our associate producer here.
Uh-huh. Who also works in the field occasionally.
She works in the... We go out to the field.
Uh-huh. And produce.
Yeah.
she got me a 3-month membership and there were 3 really cool pairs of socks. And I was like, oh, this is great. Mm-hmm. And it's once a month, which is just long enough to forget that you're in the club.
Yeah.
So you're not waiting for them.
You don't wear the
and
sock
you get
and
a package
it,
one
right?
day. No,
you,
no, okay. They're yours.
You're wearing other people's socks, babe.
No,
what's
dude.
Going on, man?
No, it's not that kind of club, bro.
I don't know. I keep hearing about all these cool clubs you're in.
So the 3-month membership ran out, and I was like, well, screw that. I'm going to join it.
All right.
So I joined it.
Cool.
I mean, I don't think it's a real club. There's no meetings.
You get like a jacket with your socks.
You get the socks, and then you get like the minutes from the last meeting.
It's emailed to you. Like, yeah, yeah.
Ballots.
You got to pay your dues.
There's a ballot for
it's
membership.
Great. I want to be part of this. Fantastic.
Dude, first rule of sock club.
Don't talk about it.
Don't talk about it.
Get beat up. Anyway.
We should probably wrap it.
We should wrap it. But this has been fun. I've really enjoyed this. I don't know, Baze, are you supposed to close this out? Do I close this out?
I think we just close it out. This has been Late Night Chats with Baze and Dan.
Late Night Chats.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering. So you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.